Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a Bubble, episode 7.5. I am Montana Samuels. He is Mike Bonner. Mike, tell the people what we're talking about this week.
I just realized that I was supposed to be driving today, because remember last time you jumped in the water quickly, so
right.
It was supposed to be me, but I can tell us.
Just go ahead.
Well, all right. I think this is the same exact format we did last week, and it worked well. I thought we had a really good pod last week, so today we're jumping off last week's pod, 6.5 of social media.
Right.
We're going to kind of give an update as to how the movement, now we're 2 weeks plus after the Parkland shooting, and it's still in the media. It still has traction, and really, that's impressive in itself in the news cycle we live in now, where it seems days become weeks and weeks become months in terms of news lingering around. And then we'll dive into the opposite side that we talked about last week in terms of false information being spread through social media.
Right, sort of the underbelly of social media influence.
So as the kind of the quick update, we've had a few, you know, gun legislation passed really because of the social media activism. Well, I guess it starts there, but it's more than just social media. You know, they're marching. We had a couple of
the school walkouts, right?
The walkouts across the country. And then I don't remember what they were called, where I think people went to Washington and laid in front of the White House to simulate deaths, but I don't know what it was called.
I don't know. I do know what you're talking about. It was an organized effort to share sort of camaraderie amongst this stance in terms of gun control.
Yeah, and it just shows what we kind of talked about last week in terms of what social media can do now, the power of
right.
It just gives you the freedom of speech, basically a megaphone. And we've seen, I think, Oregon passed a law that banned guns for domestic violence convictions.
Okay.
Florida passed a bill that prevented anyone younger than the age of 21 to purchase a gun. And we also saw President Donald Trump talk about bump stocks and trying to outlaw them. And I believe a few times, more than once, he has called out Republicans for being afraid of the NRA, which is something that Republicans usually don't do.
So I actually just saw an article, however, though, in Georgia. His last name is Deal. I'm blanking on the rest of his information, but he is apparently there was legislation.
Not to be confused with Jeff Deal, the Massachusetts rep who I
don't
recently spoke with.
So they had a piece of legislation that would give breaks to Delta Airlines. However, since Delta's ceased doing business with the NRA, they are killing that bill. So,
The lieutenant governor you're talking about of Georgia.
Right.
Yeah, I think his name was Cagle.
I just saw something. This is an Atlanta Journal Constitution article I had not read yet, but the conversation on Facebook, was saying Deal. So it very well could be. Either way, Georgia's backing down from the NRA, which I think emphasizes maybe the president's point that.
But I do think it kind of goes back into what we were talking about in terms that 2 weeks after there's legislation, or you know, because the reason why Delta is getting quote unquote, I mean, I guess that yelled at, I guess
it doesn't
you could say,
really matter
by the legislators in Georgia is because Delta cut ties with the NRA.
Right.
I guess that's the other aspect there. A whole host of companies, but I was really surprised.
Yeah, most companies.
I was really surprised at all the rental car agencies that had ties.
Hertz.
I think all of them. Hertz, Alamo, Enterprise is on there.
Yeah.
There were like It was a lot of transportation, actually. Delta was on there. And then we saw Dick's Sporting Goods.
Dick's Sporting Goods, Walmart as well.
Yeah, and for Dick's Sporting Goods refusing to sell automatic weapons, they really had done. They stopped doing that after Newtown.
Well, yeah,
and there were 46 stores that were still. So there has been some movement, yeah. Which is really not much movement. But
well,
when
and
you
in terms
at,
of the Dick's Sporting Goods, not to cut you off, but in terms of the Dick's Sporting Goods thing, here comes the pessimistic side. But like, that's not going to affect their end of the day pay. Like, their
no, it's probably not.
Their bottom line will be barely affected by that, I presume. It's more of like a status thing.
But I think it is it. It's something that is extremely small on all accounts, but it is something which, in previous shootings, there was nothing.
Right? Do you so? Let before we jump into the mm-hmm. underbelly of social media. Do you think that these changes in gun control from, let's say, Dick's Sporting Goods, Walmart, these different places, do you think that's because it's the issue of the hour, or do you think they're doing it because they actually believe in it? I think you know where I probably stand on this.
But I think a little column A, a little column B.
Okay. I think a lot of this is image protection or image boosting.
I think, yeah, to me, I thought... I mean, it all comes down to how they're going to make more money.
Right.
And I think doing something like this will allow them to get more money because more people want to shop there.
Yeah, it gets their name
in the immediacy.
Right.
Especially when you look at Dick's Sporting Goods, really wasn't much. They weren't doing anything.
What did you say it was like 45, 46 stores?
I think like 46 stores because they really had stopped it after Newtown.
Okay. And now Walmart, I'm not sure that Walmart... what their assault rifle sales look like, but Walmart truly is like a pretty substantial, they make a substantial part of their money based off of gun sales. If I'm not mistaken, aren't they like the number one provider of guns in America or something like that? I'll need to fact check that, but they do sell a lot of guns. So that one's actually sort of surprising.
As Montana just throws out, not reading Atlanta Journal-Constitution articles and throwing out Walmart's lofty gun sales.
Journalist.
Without knowing. It kind of easily transitions into our topic for today in terms of this, I don't know even how to necessarily describe it, but the desire to spread false information through social media and the consequences that kind of leads to, where days after the Parkland shooting, you had these students being asked on CNN whether or not they were crisis actors.
Right.
And the Washington Post did this really interesting article. It was called, "We Studied Thousands of Anonymous Posts About the Parkland Attack and Found a Conspiracy in the Making." And it really goes through... They report 47 minutes after the news broke of the shooting, posters on the anonymous chat board 8chan, which I had never heard of.
I hadn't either.
Started really kind of developing this conspiracy theory, as they quote the board saying, "Start looking for Jewish numerology and crisis actors."
Right.
End quote.
And so what it seems like 8chan is, for those of us like Mike and myself who were unfamiliar, is... I actually think I quoted this, maybe not. They essentially, 8chan seemingly is a place that's sort of like a hub of white supremacist jargon, sort of like that very alt-right, extreme alt-right side of things. And yeah, like Mike said, they were spreading some, they were essentially trying to cultivate a... they were trying to spread the message of this being fake. Now, when I saw this story pop up is when people were looking through the Twitter likes of Donald Trump Jr. And he started liking some tweets that
sure.
were spreading this message. So it sort of also goes to show that people are active enough on Twitter to call you on some of these things that if you choose to do so, even in a position of power.
One of the, actually 8chan was founded in 2013. 4chan was founded in 4chan was founded in 2003 by a Japanese businessman. I don't know if it says in here where 8chan developed from, but apparently 8chan developed because 4chan became too, quote-unquote, politically correct.
Okay.
Or not extreme enough, I guess I should kind of say, because the board was, the message board they were all talking on was, quote, politically incorrect, end quote.
Yeah. And so it says right here, what I was trying to quote earlier, I just found it. The Washington Post describes these anonymous forums as a cauldron of far-right extremist politics. So.
But I think, you know, it comes into the fact where most people are on Facebook or Twitter, if not both, and you mm-hmm. see these things pop up, and I think only recently has this phenomenon of incorrect facts being, usually if you saw something, whether it was an advertisement on TV or something, you kind of took it as its value. So you see these things and people, okay, sure, it must, you know, be true. Or I think it's also our society's, you know, love and passion for conspiracy theories and trying to explain the unexplainable. I think I always go, there was an episode on Scrubs and you got to break it down. And JD was trying to find out, you know, what this disease was. Uh-huh. And Dr. Cox goes, if you hear hoof, like click, 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 like hoofs or whatever, I think, whatever you want to call it, think horse, not zebra. But our mind always think like, oh man, it could be a unicorn or
something crazy.
And it's probably just what it looks like. But for some whatever reason, our minds like to
wander to the furthest depths of possibility.
What could possibly, like, you know?
Well, and so I think this brings up an interesting point, because sort of providing a bit of background onto this, the Parkland shooting, this is the latest instance of something like this. However, there have been throughout the last. This all kind of points back to bubbling over last election. And I think people have talked through this enough that this last election cycle sort of brought to the surface a lot of underlying things that had been going on in American culture. But if you remember correctly, I mean, you had the Seth Rich conspiracy. Seth Rich was a DNC staffer who, from what I read via LA Times reporting, he was hired by the Clinton campaign offered him a job, rather, 2 days prior to his death. He was what the DC police are saying was a murder stemming from a robbery gone wrong. The LA Times reports that that area of the city in which he was killed, there was a rise in crime and like robberies during that time. And Seth Rich is also one of 65 unsolved murders from that summer. However, people on we'll say the anti-Hillary Clinton side, we'll say like alt-right people, took that and ran with it and were claiming that the Clintons had something to do with it, despite the family of Seth Rich denying fervently that they believed there was any conspiracy. And that was actually spearheaded by Julian Assange of WikiLeaks, who claimed that on a Dutch... Well, let me see here. It was a Dutch television program. Julian Assange, in reference to Seth Rich, said, "Our sources take risks." This was following the Podesta emails. So, and then there was also Pizzagate. If you're familiar with Pizzagate...
I am.
We're not going to spend too much time detailing what Pizzagate is if you want to delve into that black hole of darkness.
Well, there's a lot of, you can go back to, you know, people saying that Newtown was fake. It goes back and it stunts the growth of civilization, really, when you...
Yeah. I think there's a limit to being overtly... distrusting. I think it's important to take everything with a grain of salt, especially when it's coming from like a big corporation or politics at large, because often you get surface level stuff. But if you dig a little deeper, you find more information. However, I don't think you need to go accusing the DNC of running whatever they accuse them of in Pizzagate. You know, like there's a limit in which it becomes healthy dialogue and it just transforms into conspiracy.
Yeah, I think part of the scientific method is question everything.
Right.
But it's also to gather the evidence and do what the evidence, you know, points to. And to say that Parkland or Newtown was fake.
Yeah.
That just doesn't, that goes against the scientific method. Part of it is going in without any biases.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the issue of, it's one thing to question everything. It's another thing to purposely push out false facts, which it looks like that's what these people on 4chan and 8chan were doing, which is really, it's a different, it's just, to me, I don't completely understand it, trying to think of why. And when you look, so if you read the Washington Post, and we'll link that story that, that we're discussing, it really just looks like they're pushing their agenda. It doesn't really matter how they get to their agenda. Right. It's just trying to get what they want to happen. And I tried to think to myself, why? What's the point of that? And really, it, you know, as little that I know about 4chan or 8chan or the dark web or whatever, you know, what we want to talk about, it actually isn't all that different from what mainstream public or mainstream people do, in terms of we often, and not everybody, but as I just mean society, sexual harassment, you know, victims come forward and oftentimes they're doubted. You know, they're victim blaming, so to speak, which is a problem. Or you look at, and that kind of
Or
rolls over into the courtroom, which we're talking about before this pod, where, how do you win a court case? Well, you make the witnesses look bad in terms of So I think that's, you know, where it looks crazy. Well, how could you necessarily? How could they do this to this parkland? Well, in society, we often do it too.
Well, and you even so, you brought up a good point where there's sort of the victim blaming aspect, and that immediately brought me to the Mike Brown case, simply based off the fact that people in Ferguson were saying these things have been established. This has been happening to us for years. And the dialogue we saw develop over time was simply centered on Mike Brown and his interaction with a police officer, in which, like, he charged him, that whole deal. But then you look at the Department of Justice report that comes out. The Ferguson Police Department was sicking police dogs on people. They're clearly targeting. So they're, like we've been talking about, there's a level of understanding that, yes, you do have to question stuff, but there also has to be an understanding that there's this weird dichotomy that happens where there's a sect of social media, the social media world, that will turn everything into a conspiracy, or a lot of things into a conspiracy, as long as it fits their agenda. But there's another opposite sect of the social media world that just blindly consumes all of it without a filter. And I think that's where we reach our problem, because there's a smaller middle ground than the two extreme grounds. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, and that's kind of what we looked at this pod was thinking, why does this happen? How does it happen?
Right.
And, the effects of it too. So Joan Donovan was quoted in the Washington Post story. She's a researcher at Data and Society who studies media manipulation. She said, quote, "The parents and families of these murdered children are still being harassed by people online."
Yeah.
That is the legacy of this kind of harassment. For years to come, these students in Parkland are going to have to suffer this same fate, end quote. So it, as we talked about a little bit last week, with great power comes great, you know, responsibility, in terms of everyone has a megaphone now on social media, and they can shout as loud as anyone. And as you saw, it doesn't take long, because this, before, when was this story published?
The Post story was published
February 27th. So until February 27th, I had no idea what 4chan or 8chan was.
Oh, you had never heard of 4chan before?
I had never heard of either of them. And it took, what, a couple days after the shooting for their voice to be heard on CNN. Now, I didn't know it was coming from them, but the Washington Post reports that, you know, this is where this conspiracy theory started. Or this conspiracy falsehood.
Well, and so the interesting thing about that part too is we've seen this before, where these internet conspiracies begin in obscure parts of the internet, on sort of like these, like 4chan or, so 4chan, I was familiar with 4chan as like a more extreme version of Reddit. That was a bit less like,
that's what it was kind of described as too. Right. And 8chan's a more more extreme 4chan,
which is like crazy. But so even with the Seth Rich thing, so Julian Assange goes on to that Dutch television program and talks about that, and then Sean Hannity goes on and is spearheading this movement. I think that's another point of where we see these really gaining steam are these people who put themselves in positions of trust to at least some Americans, even if that's Alex Jones, right? Some people get their news exclusively from right. Alex Jones. Alex Jones, InfoWars, for those who don't know. And it really is sort of like this agenda-pushing type news cycle.
Well, and it doesn't even have to be that. We're talking about, you know, super heavy things,
right,
but look at Geno Smith, the New York quarterback for the New York Giants, who tweets out that, "Hey guys, what do you think of this flat Earth thing? I've been looking into it."
I quote tweeted that and said, "So this pretty much ends the debate, right?"
Well, the best one I saw was the Giants bench a 2-time Super Bowl champion for this
for
guy.
For a flat earther. And Kyrie Irving. He referenced that he'd been studying up on Kyrie Irving, notable scientist.
And the issue at hand is, as people, again, question everything. Go ahead. You know,
it's important to question everything. We're not arguing that.
And then people would show him the pictures of the circle Earth.
Right.
And he would then say, "Well, Photoshop, guys." Well, then what is it going to take? Because probably the science and the algorithms and the physics that I wouldn't be able to understand. I mean, maybe Geno Smith would. I don't know. But if
he went to West Virginia, he's probably pretty smart.
What is it going to take then? You know, at what point are you going to say, okay, yeah, you know, if you want to question something, fine. But if you're actually questioning it, like right. if I ask you, "Hey, how old are you?" I'm giving you the opportunity to tell me,
right.
rather than say, "Hey, do you think the world is flat?" And you say, "No." Well, yes, you're not questioning. So it didn't just say, "Hey, I believe the earth is," you know what
right,
I mean? There's
right.
this, there's two steps to questioning things.
Right.
Questioning and then listening and finding out what is true and then making right. that establishment, not just questioning to make a statement.
Well, and so that's another thing we sort of talked about pre-pod was, not only is there this culture of distrust in the form of conspiracy rather than in the form of information seeking, but there's also a culture of where it's purely, I keep using the term agenda pushing. It doesn't always have to be that deep. It could just be.
Yeah, because I don't think Geno Smith pushed. Like,
I don't think Geno's pushing an agenda. I think he's just a person who did a little bit of Wikipedia research and said, "Okay, I could see this being true." But it seems like we've developed a culture where it's argument rather than discussion. And why that's important is we seemingly never make any progress because of that.
Which is a good. Yeah, I mean, it's a good point to kind of get back to the Geno Smith conspiracy. Is no people like so he.
We should just make the whole pod about.
Why not? You know, let's just take him at his word and say he genuinely was asking. And I actually went through the comments, and of course, some of them were funny.
Right.
There weren't a whole lot of people, you know, yelling at him, calling him stupid.
If he was truly asking, it seemed.
And there were a lot of people saying, just, you know, "Here it is." And then that's what I mean. Like, what about Photoshop? Well, then what exactly do you want?
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you're asking questions, you can't. Yeah, exactly. Like, if it's a dialogue, that's the other thing. A part of listening is crafting a response that's more thoughtful than just a blatant, like, "I don't believe you."
Well, and it kind of gets, it gets into our, because if you don't know, then how can you craft an argument right. that is right. against that? I was watching a friend of the pod, Neil deGrasse Tyson, and they were asking him about, we mentioned him so many times.
Yeah, friend of the pod. Neil, if you're out there, go ahead and email us. Come on the pod.
they were asking him about UFOs. Right. Unidentified flying objects, and they were saying, "You know, do you think that it's alien life? Do you think it's this?" And he said, "It is a UFO, which means unidentified right. flying object. So how can you say, 'I don't know what it is, but it certainly is this'? If you don't know what it is, then you can't say what it is because you don't know what it is. Therefore, it makes it a UFO. So saying this is what it is, therefore, makes it not a UFO because then you would know what it is."
Right. That's an interesting point. This is like totally off subject, but it's interesting to see how people have taken our language to pin certain things and certain words to different movements or topics without any measure of care for what these words actually mean. Like, that's an interesting, I never thought about that with a UFO, but like, by definition, everything that flies through the sky that you don't know what it is a UFO.
Right.
It could be a bird, for God's sake.
Right.
If you see something fly by you and you didn't actually, you saw it peripherally, it's a UFO.
I'm getting lost on the flat org, the flat earth society.org. This is,
you're on flat earth society.org.
Yeah. The flat earth, kind of like Ohio State, the flat earth society.org. They have a lot of pamphlets. Some
it's like Scientology.
There's featured articles, maps, mythology and religion, forums.
If you guys want to get the link for this website,
you can get it yourself.
DM Mike.
My DMs are still closed. And so as we're nearing a half hour, something popped into my head in terms of so the internet in itself is relatively new, especially in terms of how mainstream
things,
it
yeah.
is now yeah. and gathering our information. Even when I was in college, you still had to use leather-bound books to as citing sources and things like that. So now Wikipedia is kind of – in high school, oh my God, Wikipedia was – you didn't go there because anything on there was false. You
right,
didn't know anything.
Right.
Now it's – I feel like it's a fairly standard – you know, you don't live by it, but if you're Googling something
quick research, yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's a good – that's a really good place to start. So – The internet provides something that, just think of Washington, you know, George Washington, you know, Aristotle, you know,
right.
all of these people, these great, you know, minds, so to speak, that formed governments and things, they didn't have, you had to go through literal libraries and go through books, and now
sure.
I wanted to find the Flat Earth Society, and
one quick Google.
Boom. So there's so much information on there, both accurate and inaccurate,
right.
what is the future? You know, what do we see in terms
okay.
of how do you design things? And actually, you don't have to look much further than New Bedford, where Impact Labs, the Internet of Things, Chris Revendes, he actually, they just merged with Context Labs. And I spoke with the creators of Context Labs and Chris Resendes as well. And they had this huge, gigantic jargon, and I was like, oh my God, I don't know mm-hmm. what this means. Basically, they're creating a, what is the term? Blockchain, I believe they call it.
Okay.
I feel like I insulted them when I interviewed them, but I said, so basically, it's like a Twitter check mark for everything, and they were like, yeah, that's kind of the concept, but it's, so they verify everything. So
okay.
from computer chips, where the chip started, it's verified all the way to the phishing sensor out in the ocean.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So you get this chip and you also get this piece of paper that verifies when it was made, who made it, what time it was, where it went to the next step. So it verifies everything. So you know what this chip is. You know what, and it doesn't necessarily have to mean a computer chip. They do it for food. Where was this food grown? How was it grown?
Right.
So I think it was really a genius idea for them in terms of verifying everything in society, which is where we kind of are, which is what we're kind of discussing, is if everyone has this megaphone of
right.
speech, how do you know what's true? And this in Context Labs, which is actually based out of Cambridge and I think has a office or some space in the Netherlands as well, so it's
okay.
an international business, but they are in the business of veracity in the real world.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting. It's an interesting concept to think about the future of where we go here, because internet companies are always seeking ways to improve, whether it be like a simple algorithm or like boundary pushing. And it seems like to me the next logical step is to be able to find a way that doesn't impede on your right to exist online, but somehow filters out the jargon and bot technology, or just simply like crazy people from the important
voices.
It's
weird because Facebook, I feel like, is very behind in that aspect.
Right.
Where Twitter, I feel like, is, for all of Twitter's, you know, bots and absurdities,
sure.
the blue check mark, I think, does a real, like, there's an issue because crazy people are probably going to believe crazy people anyways. If you want to believe a conspiracy theory,
does
you
Alex
can.
Does Alex Jones have a blue check mark?
I think he probably does.
He's got to, right?
Twitter. Yeah, real Alex Jones. Check mark.
Even crazy people get Twitter.
But that's my point in terms of I know who he is. I know what he's saying. At some point in time, you have to have...
So there's context even to...
That's what I'm saying. Sure. I know what he is saying because that's who he is. It could go simply as someone creating a rumor about Kim Kardashian or something. I know that she has the blue check mark, so whatever she says...
It's coming from her.
Coming
or
from
her,
her
team, at least.
Now, do I have to care about that? No. But at least I know that I think that is where it where something can help, because you know at least that's coming from the source itself.
Right.
And you can all, again, you can question that.
Yeah, you can
the
always
veracity of that as well, but
I think it's easier to question when it comes from the source, right? Like it seems if some like out of left field person who gets 45,000 retweets makes a claim, you would immediately have to go, okay, who is this person? Why is this important?
Right.
How did he get this information? The whole process. But if it's a person who you know is coming from that source, your only means of questioning is, okay, are they saving face? Right? Like, is this something that would damage their reputation as a celebrity or as a news person or something like that? You know what I mean? So it does simplify the process in which you have to go through these steps to believe even a portion of what they're saying.
I'm just thinking, like in the sports realm, there are some people who are, you know, working, who have friends that are in, you know, the front offices of places, and then the person has, you know, no check mark, five right. followers, and he tweets this out and it happens to be true. There is some difficulty, you know.
I think for those who aren't familiar, the FBI is doing a massive probe on the NCAA, specifically the college basketball teams, right?
Mm-hmm.
So ESPN published a story that linked Sean Miller and I am forgetting the name of the agent. Forgive me,
an agent, yeah.
Who they essentially were crafting a way to pay DeAndre Ayton $100,000 to come to Arizona. So there were no quotes in this story that was published. So ESPN came out, I think, three separate times and made corrections, eventually just airing back to the original posting mm-hmm. of the article. So I think even places like that where journalistic integrity is important, we're getting to a place where things are moving so quickly that in order to be first, which means to be relevant, you have to rely on you have to almost rely on the blue check mark, right? So it's like you get this from a source within this organization. Okay, they're within the organization. We have to be first. We'll publish and correct later, which is kind of scary for a major media company.
I don't think that's anyone's...
I think for ESPN, that's their model.
I don't know about that.
I mean, there were no quotes in that story. They had to come out. They essentially got, like, as soon as they published something, they got checked. They were like, this timeline is off.
Mm-hmm.
Three separate occasions. I think we're getting to... So let me rephrase. I think we're getting to a point where trusting your gut by means of... Trusting your gut in order to be the first is of utmost importance for a lot of media companies. I'm definitely not arguing whether that's a good thing or not. I think I would actually argue the opposite. I'd much rather get my facts right before I publish the story. But I think we're seeing a trend in which being first is more important than...
I think technically it is, but I also... now we're getting into a journalism argument where... Or discussion, and I don't want to necessarily dive into that, but I think it has to do with just lack of resources because you don't have enough people in the chain of command, and which is a whole story of, you know, accuracy. You know,
yeah.
Usually media is that's why it's so important,
right,
to be correct, because at some point, there has to be a baseline.
Yeah.
At some point, whether it's, you know, 2 + 2 = 4, you know, a number is a number. We can't question that the number 2 = 2, like,
right, 2 + 2,
one individual and another individual, sure, equals 2. At some point, you have to have some baseline. And I feel like a lot of, especially local newspapers, they do a really good job. And there has to be some faith. You know, why is our dollar worth a dollar? I mean, it's a piece of paper.
Right.
But there's some faith that it exists. There has to be some basis of faith in some truth, whether it's coming, wherever it's coming from.
Well, and I think that's sort of what I was, that's sort of the point I was hoping to make, was that it seems that in the world where we're talking about social media conspiracy, a lot of, and like you said, let's not turn this into a whole journalistic thing, but I think it's really affecting how at least players in the industry react. I mean, you see, like Adrian Wojnarowski or whatever. That's how you say his name, mm-hmm, right? Okay. Wojnarowski.
Wojnarowski, yeah. I think it's an art. Wojnarowski.
I mean, it's a tweet before the article, right? So I think we're seeing now it's really important for people to get ideas out. And I think that's being driven, as we've talked about the last 2 weeks, social media driving trends in multiple different facets. I think that's another example of social media driving a trend of being first is of utmost importance.
But that's always been it. You know, scoops, and whether, sure, you went back to when there was no internet, being the first person to report something was always...
always important, but not at the sacrifice of quotes or proper sourcing.
Are you sure about
like
that?
Well,
yeah,
I suppose no.
It's a great thing to, you know, say, well, back in the good old days.
Sure, I'm not old enough to say good old days.
Let's say, you know, yellow journalism and, you know,
sure.
I think, you know, when you look at the Washington Post, the New York Times, I think for the most part, I don't think newspapers have changed all that much in terms of what they want to do, what they want to promote. You used to wait to get it on the paper, you know, the next morning. Now you just tweet it and get it out. It's just you're constantly publishing on Twitter, whereas on your paper you would publish
once
in the morning.
Day,
yeah,
once a week.
And that obviously leads for when you have, you know, a scoop and you know that no one else has it, and you're printing a paper and your deadline's at 11, say, you can, you know, you have that time to double, triple read over and check.
Right.
The Twitter doesn't always necessarily...
Twitter doesn't wait. Twitter does not wait.
It is, yeah. It's, and again, great power comes great responsibility.
That's true. All we're saying is Instagram, fix your algorithm, for God's sakes. That's all we're trying to say with this
Instagram
podcast. Fix the algorithm.
What's the algorithm?
You're not up on this?
No.
Oh, God. So Instagram... it used to be a chronological order posting.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I like the chronological much better.
Yeah. Thanks. Now, the joke is we're going to cut that part. We're not going to cut.
I'm just too old now.
I know. It's okay. One last point I wanted to make.
Go
just,
for it.
Just because in the Washington Post article, I saw this, and I think they did this on purpose. So I have this idea in my head that, like, all people who are really, really into hip hop, whenever they see a chance to make a hip hop reference, they do it. And I have to give a shout out to Craig Timberg and Drew Harwell of the Washington Post, who wrote the article that we were citing. They had a great quote break.
This better be good because...
Oh, it's good.
Because this is what it's good. We're ending the pod on this. So.
I know. So they had a great quote break, and it was like the... fifth graph, perhaps? Sixth graph. It doesn't matter. Essentially, a quote from 8chan started with, "There's a war going on outside no man is safe from," which is famously a lyric from Prodigy of Mobb Deep on the song Survival of the Fittest off The Infamous. And I just thought that was ironic because this is like an alt-right white supremacist group, and they're quoting Prodigy of Mobb Deep, quite possibly like... the most, like, Prodigy, I don't know. I just found it funny.
That was on Reddit, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
It said a frequent conspiracy theory poster on the website Reddit.
whatever, man. They got a Mobb Deep lyric in their story, and I thought that was cool. So shout out to them.
We staggered across the finish line of this one. It kind of all went wrong I don't know. We went off on a weird tangent. Not even a tangent, but...
It wasn't our most focused pod, but we're speaking ideologically. However, I do have actually something to add for next week. We cited the Washington Post a lot. Next week, we're going to be speaking with Jessica Contrera of the Washington Post on the pod. So look forward to that if you'll be tuning in.
8.5 will be better than 7.5.
8.5. They're all better than the first.
The goal is to get better than the last one.
We're always improving here at the bubble. It's of utmost importance.
The bubble's always great. It's always growing. The bubble.
You got your bubble pun in this week. You hadn't got one in yet this week. Nice. Very good. You can always trust Mike for a bubble pun. All right. For Mike Bonner, I'm Montana Samuels. This was episode 7.5. Join us next week for 8.5 with Jessica Contrera, and we hope you'll have us back.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.